Let's talk. John Brown.
Heatwave is a brilliant new book out about the summer of 1976. Britain at boiling point has been described as a teeming chronicle of those scorching months. A friend of the show, Pete Pavis, called it an absolute joy. Temperatures soaring to 35 degrees, the water shortages, and a ministry of drought. There was what was not to love. I was 8 years old at the time. I remember it very well because it was what James Hunt fever gripped the nation. But it's the subject of a brilliant new book by John L. Williams, who joins me live on the line now. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Why did you write that long, hot summer of 76? If you were a schoolboy, as I was back then, you will remember it because it was a time of, it seemed to go on forever. It was, you know, weather-wise, we had seen nothing like it. What was it that sparked the interest for you to write this? Because it's not a sort of rose-tinted spectacles, wasn't it great to have a drought? There were serious political things going on and social at the same time as well.
Exactly. Well, 3 or 4 years ago, we had a pretty hot summer here in Britain, and everyone started saying, oh, it's the hottest one since 1976. So I started thinking, yeah, that was quite a summer. And I thought, I wonder what the real, you know, what the whole story of that summer is. So I started looking back at the old newspapers across the summer, and you realise that, you know, I was 15 and, you know, I was just enjoying the sunshine, really, and studying for my O-levels and stuff. And, I remember all the nice stuff, really. And then because I was barely aware of politics. And then you start looking in the papers and you realise, my God, there was all manner of rioting, crime. There was an incredible amount of music as well. But on the one hand, nowadays people remember it as the summer the Sex Pistols got started, but it was actually the summer of Elton John's Breaking My Heart.
Yeah, exactly.
And GTD.
Yeah.
The real thing. So it's a real funny mixture. In some ways, it was an incredibly fun time. In other ways, it was really quite a difficult, dark time. Because Britain in the 70s was, there was a lot of injustice knocking around. There was a lot of, racism, hasn't gone away. But back then, it was absolutely normal. And, homophobia, women's rights were, really not acknowledged. And across, when the weather's hot and it stays hot for a while, at first people are just going, oh, this is lovely. And after a bit, though, tempers start to fray. And if you're gay guys outside a pub at Earl's Court being harassed by the police, you finally something snaps. And instead of just meekly, going back inside and behaving yourself, people decided to push back. And the same with young people in Southall who, after a Asian kid was murdered, it was that kind of network moment, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting because, again, we're living in a climate now, and, the 76 is 50 years ago. And a lot of the people who are trying to push the narrative on us are saying, oh, well, the 70s were great. Britain is broken. The 70s were great. Everything was wonderful. It wasn't. Britain in 1970s was not a place that I would like to go back to if I had a time machine. Britain was, if you think Britain is broken now, well, I mean, 76, is Wilson still Prime Minister at this point?
He's just resigned, in fact, and it's Sonny Jim Callaghan is Prime Minister, and Britain famously is running out of money and has to go cap in hand to the IMF to say, can you bail us out, please? And again, funnily, like today, really, you have a Labour Prime Minister that everyone feels, oh, this man is too boring and grey and he's not going to change anything. And you had, a new leader on the right wing.
Yes.
Who at first people didn't take seriously at all because she was a woman. But now they were thinking maybe this Margaret Thatcher person is going to go places.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's a very
Yeah, it's, and there's a lot of unrest, and you know, and again, because younger people were, you know, my younger listeners won't understand, you know, all those areas like Docklands and you know Liverpool where the Beatles thing, that in the '70s that didn't exist. I mean, the war, you know, the war was a major subject, because if you'd fought in the war, then you would be around, you know, my age, like 50s now, and so there hadn't been a regeneration. People weren't living in the inner cities. The inner cities were falling down. The police were a different thing then. I mean, with their, you know, with their famous sort of on their heads, sort of the what Rowan Atkinson said, you know, come in, kneel, and get that what's it off your head. You talk about institutional racism now. Well, for goodness sake, in the '70s, forget it. And of course, we had the National Front, who were sort of in certain areas of London, were openly marching through the streets. So to be a young black man in London, or a young black person, it was the SUS laws. You were in a lot of trouble then, weren't you?
Yeah, no, all of that's absolutely true. You know, the racism, for instance, you know, after this kid was murdered in Southall, one of the right-wing leaders, a man called Kingsley Reid, gives a speech which ends up with the line, "What do I feel about it? One down, a million to go."
Whoa. It's just,
you know, wow. The level of hatred was kind of off the scale. You know. So, yes, and, you know, we talk about the police. You know, now people say, oh, you know, they imagine it was all Dixon and Doc Green, but actually, that summer, the Yorkshire Ripper is just starting work, and the police are making an absolute mess of it. There's a child murder up in Rochdale, and the police arrest an obviously innocent man and frame him for it. You know, these were not idyllic times. And, I mean, a story that stuck with me even then and has done ever since is there was a Lido in Parliament Hill by the edge of Hampstead Heath in London. Incredibly popular that summer. Should normally have a couple of hundred people in. They reckon there was about 1,500 kids in there. And one of them was a boy, a 15-year-old my age, a boy with kind of special needs, who was, you know, he was mucking about in the pool, got in the middle of some hard lads, and they basically beat him and drowned him and left him dead on the bottom of the pool. And nobody ever said who it was. I mean, that was the reality of teenage life at the time. Was there were, you know, there were gangs, and these are, you know, these are all white boys. It's you can't blame it on some outsiders. You know, teenage boys can be feral at all times, and this was a case that shocked everyone. That a kid could get killed in the middle of 1,000 people, and no one would come forward and say who it was. So, yeah, you should definitely take off the rose-tinted spectacles.
Absolutely. So how do you, I mean, with so much going on, and then the, you know, the cultural thing, I mean, if you look at sort of the, I mean, most of the BBC comedies at that time, this is the comedies you can't show now, you know, because the you know, Are You Being Served? Openly, you know, somebody, you know, homosexuals are mocked, you know, I'm free. And I remember all doing that in the playground. And we'd all be up before a diversity council now. You know, as for ethnic minorities, let's not even get started with, you know, A.R. Fotman and all sorts of stuff like that. So how do you put this all together in a narrative? Because there is so much going on, and you've got to sort of balance it so it's not all sort of Don't Go Breaking My Heart and Bell Bottoms and that sort of thing and Ladybirds and stuff like that. But so how do you put this all in a narrative that kind of makes sense, John?
Well, what I've done is go month by month through the summer and pick out sort of 15 stories to, you know, look at in depth, which are a real mixture. There are some pretty dark ones about the police, you know, like the murder in the Lido, but also kind of interesting ones about a strike by women in West London for equal pay, where they sat out all summer outside this windscreen wiper factory in Brentford.
Yeah.
And by the end of the summer, they won, you know, through sheer determination. And so they became a little landmark on the Great West Road. All these women sat out with sort of beach umbrellas above them on strike. They called it the Costa del Trico, which was the name of the factory. So, and then one thing I would say, though, is there was a lot of really bad stuff. But surprisingly, for instance, that summer, there was also the first black sitcom to be shown on TV called The Fosters, with a very young Lenny Henry in it, which people forget.
Yeah.
The big breakout cool record of the summer was by Joan Armour Trading, who, you know, is a kind of young gay black woman making jazzy, folky soul music. So Britain, it's not all one story as well. I wouldn't want to, at the same time, as you don't want to say it was all great back then. You also don't want to say that people were all horrible back then, because they really weren't.
And we've got Tom Robinson band. We've got Tom Robinson as well, haven't we? Did he bring out Glad to Be Gay? I mean, if he brings out Glad to Be Gay in that, I mean, it's a standout track anyway, a brave track to bring out. He's always been open about his sexuality, but in like 70s Britain, I mean Rod Stewart's got The Killing of Georgie Boy at the same time, hasn't he, which is
that came out early that summer. Tom Robinson, I talked to Tom Robinson, and he talks about writing Glad to Be Gay that summer, which was quite an angry song, which he wrote after he'd seen the Sex Pistols play in a small club in London. So everything was kind of changing, basically. You think on a hot summer that nothing's going to change because everyone's just lying on a towel in the garden. But actually, weirdly, everything seemed to change. Britain after that summer was not the same place it was before, and that's, I hope, what comes through in the book.
Yeah, and also I think because of the communities as well. You know, we talk about the. I'm sitting talking to you from a radio station in Spain, and people will phone me up going, because I do a phone-in show of a Tuesday, and people phone me up and they go, the problem is it's the immigrants, and they're calling from sort of like Costa Blanca, and it's like, well, I'm an expat, but we have always gone, it's the immigrants, haven't we? But you know, the communities now that are, you know, places like Notting Hill, which are now, or Harleston Junction, which apparently now is called West and North Kensington, but places like this, you know, are heavy immigrant populations. There are disturbances, but off the back of this, there are sort of green shoots, because we'll see in like a couple of years, like the Two Tone Scar movement, stuff like that, and Notting Hill Carnival, although it's still a flashpoint, it will be, but there, it's not all us v them, and things that are going to come along a little bit later than punk, which fizzes out, stress, diversity, community, etc.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that came out of that summer was Rock Against Racism. This started with Eric Clapton getting on stage in Birmingham, absolutely drunk, but which is no excuse, but kind of explains why he decided to let it all out. He starts ranting about Enoch Powell and how it's all the immigrants are the problem and Enoch is right. And there was a review of it in one of the music papers, and that inspired people to say, we can't have this. This is not what rock music's about. Eric Clapton's made his career playing black music, and he's now saying that he likes the music, but he wants the people to go away. It makes no sense. And so very quickly, Rock Against Racism spiraled from, a couple of little benefit shows in pubs to, within a year, massive rallies through London with The Clash and Tom Robinson playing. And, Britain, it was really, something in that summer really sparked people to decide they needed things to change.
Yeah, and at that time, again, no social media. So if you want to let people know, there's a massive thing at Finsbury Park with The Clash, but I think it's Burning Spear there as well. But you have to get leaflets out and give them out, and you have to physically, and you have to phone them up from payphones. So getting sort of thousands of people to come to Finsbury Park is a major achievement.
Well, it is, in a way, though. A funny thing about the modern world is, like, if I live in London, and it was easier then in some ways to know what's going on, because you would just get Time Out magazine every week, and that would have a list of everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
The internet ought to deliver this kind of thing, but actually it's really bad at it. All we ever hear about is you're on Facebook or whatever, and it just tells you things that you already know about 300 times, or things you've got no interest in at all. It's actually quite hard to know what's going on these days, which is weird.
And as the summer sort of carried on, we had a minister for that, didn't we? We had hosepipe bans. We had putting bricks in your putting bricks in your toilet cistern as well. I mean, it was. But as soon as they appointed a drought minister, didn't it start to rain or something like? Was that an urban myth? I think.
No, this is absolutely true. That was a man called Dennis Howell, and he was appointed Minister for Drought. It was about 2 days it started raining. So obviously that's the solution to everything. You've got a problem, just appoint a minister for it, and then a couple of days later, it'll all be done. just a little story that I got alongside the big stories in the book, there was lots of little stories. And one I quite liked was that the government at the time were very strong on strikes and, absolutely refusing to give in to strikers' demands. But at one point, the staff of the House of Commons bars went on strike to be allowed to take their jackets off in the heat. And obviously the government stayed very, very strong and firm against this unreasonable demand, and they took all of 15 minutes before they capitulated.
Ah, genius. What are you hoping that people will? I mean, there is a point to this book, apart from, like I said before, as we turn to look back and go, oh, they, things were better then. But, and did you know, by the way, that the Wurzels were at number one on this day 50 years ago with Combine Harvester? So that's the that sets the level, you know, to begin the summer with.
Absolutely.
Go on, sorry. Yeah.
No, I've got a little bit about the Radio 1 Roadshow from that summer, which was such a, you know, such a big thing.
Gosh, yes.
And, with the Wurzels appearing on some beach somewhere. There's quite a funny clip of it on YouTube if you have a look.
I'd forgotten about the Radio 1 Roadshow, because that was a big thing when we were kids, that we were teenagers, kids, and you know, could go and see them live. Anyway, what are you hoping that people will take from your book, Heatwave?
Well, on one hand, I think there's a lot of pleasure to be had in, you know, remembering things or finding out about things if you're younger that were going on. But at the same time, I hope it makes people see that if you want things to change, you've got to stand up for yourself. And that's what people did across that summer.
The book. So, yeah. The book is called Heatwave. Listeners, if you go to our own TRE bookstore, you'll see the front cover, which is a brilliant front cover. Click on it, and it will be wending its way to you by a well-known delivery firm named after a South American river. John, don't worry. I'm not stealing money off you. It goes directly to you. If you think this is a side hustle I've got going, but don't worry. If people want to find you online and say nice things to you or compare sunburn notes, where can they find you?
Yeah, if you just search for John L. Williams Writer, you'll get to my website. The actual address is a bit complicated. Yeah, John L. Williams Writer, my website, and I've got a Substack as well.
Brilliant. The book is called Heatwave, The Summer of 1976, Britain at Boiling Point. It's by John L. Williams. John, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
And you. Thanks a lot.